And old Lucy Brown, yes, that line falls on the right, babe, not that Maggie's back in town. Look out, old Maggie is back.
Should have gone for 11 on the movies, Herbie. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're climbing the rungs of cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. I'm Zach Brooks, and playing the game with me for the 223rd time, my partner on this podcast,
Brennan Fitzpatrick. And I have my headphones on. I can't say for sure that I'm in a soundproof booth. There's always ambient noise in an apartment building like mine. So yes,
you were at a soundproof booth minus your refrigerator that sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Closes. Exactly. Yeah. What do you want from me? It's not like this is the perfect era of the 1950s where everything goes right and nobody has any complaints, right?
Right. Yes, exactly. I did think about pulling up like the full Jack Barry introduction to 21 and
just reading that.
Yeah, yep. Christopher McDonald, very good in that.
My God. I love how he's doing. Sorry, we'll get into it. We'll get into it.
Well, Brendan loves something about Christopher McDonald.
We'll love everything about Christopher McDonald.
We'll find out what it is. Yes. last week, we discussed The Truman Show. And this week, due to a TV production connection, we are talking about Quiz Show. One thing that, as soon as we hung up, Brendan, that we both realized is the word show is in the title of both movies. Neither of us.
So I think it's The Show Must Go On is our title connection.
Ooh, The Show Must Go On. Yeah, that's I had what did I have? Enjoy the Show. I also had before I put it together, The Show was in the title of both movies, which I'm sure every listener was like slapping their head.
Idiots.
Like, yeah, you idiots. Yeah. I did have Based on a Truman Story, I thought could have been
that's
a good
very
movie.
Funny. That's very funny. We lost 21. Good thing it wasn't our 21st episode.
True. Oh yeah. We almost our 221st episode. Had we planned this? Yes, it's 223.
Well, it's also almost the 30 years greater anniversary of Quiz Show altogether. So
nice.
You know, it's a day of almost.
Cool. Yeah. We do not have the answers. We just go each episode. Clearly, exactly. We don't have the answers. Clearly. If you listen to this podcast, you know we don't have the answers to everything.
Absolutely not.
All right, so we're going to be talking about Quiz Show. Then at the end of the episode, we will pick our 224th movie based on suggestions sent in by the listeners and us, your hosts. We'll be spoiling Quiz Show. If you haven't seen it, it's on Hoopla, if you can get that through your library. It's also, I think Megan the Librarian said it's on one of the Canadian services. I don't know if it was Disney Plus or Crave.
It might be Disney Plus because it's a Disney movie, but it wouldn't surprise me. Disney was like a co-producer on this. So
yeah, pick it up, Disney. Yeah. Why don't you put this on American Disney Plus?
Oh man. It should be on Hulu, to be honest. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's basically the same thing at this point. So you can stream it there. But if you do want to if you haven't seen Quiz Show, you don't want to be spoiled on it. You don't want to be spoiled on history. Timestamp, as always, is in the description of this podcast. You can skip ahead, hear what we're picking for next week's movie. But as always, we recommend that you watch Quiz Show, listen to our discussion.
Absolutely.
All right. And social media, @ Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, themovieladder@gmail.com, The Movie Ladder on Letterboxd. All those good ways to get in touch with us.
Yep.
Brendan, what is the best show you've watched in the last
show
week?
Show
because we're enjoying the show.
Yeah. So it's Jeopardy. Just kidding. I want to talk about a movie that has been on my radar for a long time, but I had never actually seen, and that's the 1981 Michael Mann movie Thief.
Oh yeah.
I finally caught up with Michael Mann's first major release, starring James Caan, Robert Prosky, Jim Belushi. This movie's a lot of fun. This might be like the ultimate Saturday afternoon dad movie. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're like sitting around and you're flipping cable channels and you're not really sure what to watch. And you stumble upon Thief on like AMC or TNT and you just get sucked in. I was absolutely sucked in by this movie. I think it's really great. I think James Caan gives a brilliant performance as the titular jewel thief. Yeah. I think people should check it out. It's streaming for free on Amazon Prime, nice. Which is really great, but the audio sucks. I had to crank up my audio to like 30, which I never have to do.
And Michael Mann movies have very loud gunshots in them. So yes, I'm sure that you also had to crank it back down during.
I didn't actually, because the movie overall was like super low quality sound. And I had just watched something on Netflix where my my max volume was set at 12.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I switched to this thing on Amazon Prime and had to keep cranking up the volume. It was really annoying.
Well, Brandon, you could have watched this on Hoopla.
Yeah, that's very true, but I don't know if the sound quality would have been better.
I was going to say, maybe it's better than Prime. Yeah,
and maybe. Good to know. But yeah, really loved Thief. I think people should check it out if you haven't seen it already. Really impressive debut for Michael Mann. You can see a lot of the things that he really loves to highlight in his future films in this movie, especially like a really good diner scene between two characters where they just are sitting across from each other having this whole philosophical conversation about life. It's really good. So Thief is the best thing I watched since the last time we talked.
I remember that movie. It's a movie that I've been meaning to revisit. I watched it just last fall, but I just feel like I watched some more Michael Mann movies recently. I wanted to pick up Thief again. I just haven't gotten around to watching it again. But I do remember thinking that it was like, the beginning goes super hard, and then you kind of like lull into the story, and then the end goes super hard.
It does. Yeah, the ending is real hard. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What it really reminded me of, like, I was surprised this came out in 1981, because especially the score of the film, which is this weird electronic jazz rock. That's right.
Like kind
of synth-y, yeah. Yeah, synth pop feels like the score of every 80s action movie that comes after it. Like Beverly Hills Cop, Lethal Weapon, all those like Arnold Schwarzenegger type scores. Like, it really felt like a template setter for the scores of films of the 1980s.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I just looked it up because I remembered hearing something about the score. Mm-hmm. So it's by a band called Tangerine Dream.
Yes.
Which you might have heard mentioned. They also did the score of Sorcerer, another movie that has come up recently. So. Yep.
Right on.
And did do some other 80s movies, Near Dark, Risky Business, not Terminator, like you mentioned them.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, I'm going to ladder off of your best thing you watched this week. Yeah. And I'm going to do a debut feature from a prolific pair of directors, the Coen brothers. I rewatched Blood Simple this weekend, which I had seen recently. Actually, I think I'd seen it like almost exactly 2 years before. Okay. The last time I logged it, sometime in April of 2022. And another one that I just had been wanting to revisit, especially because I've watched some Coen Brothers movies recently, and it's fun to watch those debuts and kind of see like the fingerprints of things that you'll see in the future. Especially like you mentioned with Michael Mann. And it's just such a good, like, grimy, like, you know, crime gone wrong story that the Coens are so good at. I ended up watching it. Actually, the reason what inspired me to watch it was I watched Roadhouse for the first time this weekend. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do another like 80s movie that takes place in like the back of one of these like Roadhouse style bars. I think it's such perfect casting too.
Yep.
Especially for a debut feature, like John Getz is the lead, but then, you know, we get this M. Emmett Walsh, who just died.
So R.I.P. M. Emmett Walsh.
Yeah. And he's like so good as the investigator and like just all of these sleaze bags like screwing each other over. And it doesn't have quite the humor that you get in Fargo, but it does have just the, like, what it's very, very much reminded me of No Country
that we watched last year. Yeah, it's setting up a lot of the vibe that they're going to, like, lean into for Fargo and Raising Arizona.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And Frances McDormand, who's like, I think she's unrecognizable in this movie. Like, if you don't see her in the cast list, I do not realize that's her. And just like a rock solid crime movie. And if you haven't seen it, I would recommend Blood Simple. It's on a bunch of places. It's on Criterion. It's on Max. I happen to have the Blu-ray, so I watched it on disc, but you can stream it places. So that is the best thing I watched this week. But let's talk about quiz show.
Yeah, let's do it. Right. Pop quiz hotshot. Pop quiz hotshot. What is the name of the game show that started off all this big mess of the quiz show scandals in the 1950s?
Is it 21?
Let's play 21.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
What is 21? Yes.
What is 21?
The fix is in this week on 21.
Indeed.
Yeah. So,
Marty!
First watch for me, Brendan, this is one you've seen before.
Yeah.
I had been meaning to check out, one of the Best Picture nominees from 1995.
Yep.
And just had been a blind spot for me that I had heard about. I knew it was about a game show, but I didn't really know what else was about it. So it was my first time checking that out.
Yeah. Best Picture loser, much like On the Waterfront, lost to Marty. Quiz Show lost the 1995 Oscar for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Zach, I absolutely adore this movie. I mean,
do you? Okay.
Yeah. I sat down last night to start rewatching this, and from the opening scene where you meet Rob Morrow's character getting into a fancy Cadillac and getting seduced by the razzle-dazzle of the salesman who's pitching him this car, this movie's just a vibe. Mm-hmm. Like, I've talked about in the past, like, there are dad movies and there are, like, fun bro movies and there are, like, movies that remind me of high school and movies that remind me of college. And then I've talked about, like, this thing called, like, whiskey movies.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Which is where you just, like, sit down with a whiskey or a bourbon and let the movie just sort of take you on a ride, and you don't really think about it too much. You just go with the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened last night. Like, about half an hour into this, I went to my cabinet and I poured out a bourbon.
Nice.
And watched the rest of this movie for the last hour and a half with a bourbon in my hand. I love this movie. This movie just goes. From the beginning, you're introduced to all these awesome characters who are played by awesome actors. The cast is stacked. We start with Rob Morrow. We start with Christopher McDonald doing acting warm-ups in the...
How Now, Brown Cow.
Yeah, like, How Now, Brown Cow.
Yeah, reminded me of that.
Ron Burgundy style. Then you get introduced to John Turturro, who is just doing this insane performance of... like an exaggerated version of himself, sort of, where he's playing Herb Stemple, who has been on this amazing winning streak on this Quiz Show 21. And then the movie shifts again when you're introduced to Ralph Fiennes' character, the charismatic Charles Van Doren, who they want to beat Herb Stemple. And I love all of these characters and the entire journey that they go on. Especially this watch, I was really taken with the Ralph Fiennes performance, because there was something that I like probably didn't catch on to back, you know, when I was 14 years old and saw this in the theaters, that really struck me this time. And I don't know how intentional this was on Redford's part or if this was an acting choice by Fiennes, but there's this weird magnetic energy between him and the Rob Morrow character that almost comes off as like a sexual tension.
He is
like romantically drawn to the Rob Morrow character, and I think like so like there was just something in his body language and facial expressions whenever he interacted with him that seemed incredibly queer-coded to me. And so I was curious afterwards, and I couldn't find anything to like corroborate this, but I'm curious if he picked up on that at all.
No, not really. I mean, I do feel like they had just like a friendship that grew, okay. But it was you know, a friendship with one guy who was trying to kind of take down, but like, you know, essentially like take down the legacy of what Charles Van Doren had done. But they do have like this kind of like adversarial friendship.
It actually reminded me a lot of, I think probably because of the sailboat scene, it reminded me a lot of the Jude Law versus Matt Damon performances in Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah, no, I didn't get that vibe really from it. Maybe on a rewatch I would. I got it more, you know, a movie that could be the movie Atlas, Catch Me If You Can. Kind of a little bit more of the Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks characters. Gotcha. Like, not quite as adversarial as that, but I picked up on that. So let me see. I'm trying to decide what to react to from what you've just said.
Sorry.
About,
yeah, start where you want to start, because obviously I adore this movie. So,
right. You know. And I think this movie is, like, very solid. I don't get the, like, you know, I'm not like warm fuzzies about this like you are. Like, I think it's like a very solid, like, historical fiction movie. You know, I think it's I think the way we're going to start is the fact that we get Martin Scorsese in an acting role in this.
Absolutely.
Because yeah, I think that there's an alternate, and I'd be curious if you have any of the backstory in this, but like, I think there's an alternate version of this movie that is a Martin Scorsese film and not a Robert Redford film.
Yeah. So originally this was going to be a Barry Levinson film, but Barry Levinson was caught up in the pre-production and post-production of Bugsy with Warren Beatty, and okay. He couldn't commit to this. Mm-hmm. So he handed it off to Redford, who was looking for something to do that would be, quote unquote, more exciting to him than his previous film, River Runs Through It. Oh, which, if you've ever seen A River Runs Through It, is certainly not an exciting film.
Nope, I am not.
Lots of good looking people in River Runs Through It, but not entirely exciting. It's about fly mm-hmm. fishing. It's about yeah. fly fishing, and it sounds like it's about fly fishing, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. No, I haven't seen a ton of Redford's films. I did recently watch Ordinary People.
Yes.
And that's where I thought you were going to go. But I guess Ordinary People was 14 years before this. So Ordinary People was a while before this. So I just think, like, the fact that we get Scorsese showing up in a movie that is about, like, I mean, this is a crime story, but it's not, mm-hmm. I mean, and it's a crime story that's investigated by Congress, but this is like they say at the end, this is pretty much a victimless crime, right? Like, it's a victimless crime. Yeah, small crime. Like, I guess it's not really victimless because the people who lost on the game show, like, were victims, right? Yeah. But, sure. You know, this isn't Goodfellas. This isn't Casino. Like, this isn't the, like, Scorsese crime epic. And I guess, was Casino, what year was Casino?
Yeah, Casino was the same year, right? 94? The real victims, 90. One of the things that they try to lay out here is that the real victims are the American people who got duped by some. It's the first, like, takedown of television. Like, let's show the American people that television is fake.
Right. And so I think, you know what I mean? What we're like getting. I went back and rewatched the first 20 mm-hmm. minutes of this movie before we started recording, because I felt like, especially that first scene is very weird, where we're getting Goodwin buying the car from Mr. Carosi, who, if you might recognize him from Saved by the Bell, the summer season, Saved by the Bell. Where I was like, I don't understand why they're showing him buy the car. Like, I guess that is our introduction to that character, but how does that tie into the rest of this story? And then I started thinking about how he's listening to the, like, he turns on the radio, and the first thing he hears is about the space race with the Russians, and you're seeing, like, just this beauty, you know, like, the car is presented almost like the car would be presented on a game show, right? So it's showing kind of, like, our, like, the materialism that we have, right, for these prizes, but then also the way that, like, media is influencing, is influencing, and it's not TV, it's radio, but then we go right from radio to, and I think there's some lines in there, too, about, like, about the way TV influences us. So I think it does fit thematically. I just don't think it still really fits with the rest of the movie.
I mean, it's symbolic. I mean, whether you want to say that's a real scene or a dream scene from his character about buying the car, whether he actually did or not, it's definitely like a meta quality to, like, here is this shiny new thing that can make you feel like the biggest man in the world. And, you know, it's the same fakery as television, where, like, at the end of the day, there are all these problems that you're going to have by having this brand new car.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I didn't think about it as a dream. And I also was curious, and I didn't really check, does that take place after all of this? Or is that
unclear?
Yeah, because they talk about the Russians launching a satellite before the Americans.
And they talk about Sputnik throughout the movie, too.
Yeah, I feel like you might be able to timestamp if that takes place before or after all of this takedown. I feel like I've kind of jumped a little bit all over the place. But I do think, like, there is a version of this movie where it's Scorsese making this crime thriller, and not Robert Redford. And so the fact that Scorsese shows up as the producer for the network.
For the network. Scorsese is the sponsor lead.
Oh, he runs.
Yeah, he's the ad lead for Geritol. So he's a producer that is involved the advertisement. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, this leads to, you know, part of the reason that his role is important is one of the things that, you know, sort of came out of all this was the influences that sponsors have over television shows and what kind of influence they're allowed to have from now on after these scandals
and
how
also,
involved they're allowed to be.
Yeah. And to also tie in with Scorsese, this reminds me a lot of the last scene of Killers of Flower Moon, yep. right? Where we're getting a sponsor-led production highlighting of a sponsor. TV is, to so much of an extent, like, TV is still an ad. Like, it's more about advertising than it is the product, right? You watch, you watch any sporting event, and it's, you know, it's about the sponsors. Yeah. Like, and that's what makes makes it able to, to be entertainment for us.
To go to reality television, I mean, two of our most watched reality TV shows in Survivor and Big Brother often had or have challenges sponsored by X company, X restaurant, X movie that's premiering, you know, like, they will have challenges that are themed where the reward is you get to go watch this movie, whether it's Gulliver's Travels or The Other Guys or whatever.
No, they didn't watch The Other Guys. They watched Jack and Jill.
They, well, what did they watch on Big Brother? That was the one I was thinking.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember.
What, but they're like, this is still a thing to this day. You know?
I like that. I was thinking about the Charmin Shack or the Charmin.
Oh yeah, the concept of Charmin.
Concept of Charmin
in Panama.
Yeah.
So. Bruce can't poop.
And I think, like, I mean, the thing is like, people will complain about advertising on TV, just in general, sponsorship, but we would not have TV if there was is just a fact of the matter. Is like, if you want to have TV that you can watch, like, advertisers will make it possible. And so I don't have a problem, like, with the, I mean, in this, I do have a problem with the cheating aspect of it, but the fact that, like, 21 is actually just a giant advertisement for Geritol, like, well, people got to enjoy 21 thanks to Geritol.
Jeopardy still has categories that are sponsored to this day by, whether it's by a car company or by a, you know, National Geographic sponsored category or a category dedicated to some TV show that's premiering the following week on ABC.
Like, I mean, did you watch WrestleMania this weekend?
I didn't, but okay, you're gonna tell me about it.
Yeah. There was a WrestleMania had a sponsor on the mat for Logan Paul's drink, Prime. They had like a logo for Prime, just like you see on UFC, right? They had the mat sponsor. And then each match was actually sponsored by like a different sponsor. They had like Dude Wipes sponsored one of the, and so there was Dude Wipes everywhere. And it's like, okay, it's a little in your face advertising, but it also is making it possible to watch this and not have to pay $100 to watch it. So like, that's the trade. Yeah,
there you go. That's, it's the price we pay. And the other, I mean, this is the thing that really is the major thing to come out of this is, you know, the quiz show scandals themselves. I mean, 21 wasn't the only game show of this era that was rigging the game to promote people that they wanted to be on the show for long periods of time. The $64,000 question is another famous example of a show from this time where the results were largely rigged in favor of whoever the producers thought were going to pull in the most at the most viewers for at that time.
Well, and I think that idea of like the champion is plateauing, right? That Herb he's been there for, he's winning too much. It's not exciting for people to see him win. Right. And I was thinking much about like James Holzhauser.
Yeah. Or Ken Jennings in his original run, or Amy Schneider, or all of these players on Jeopardy who have these long extended runs, and you start getting complaints from people on Twitter and Facebook and whatever about like, when are they going to have this person lose? And the thing is, like, now, because of game show laws, they can't. That's why Jeopardy had for the longest time a 5-episode cap. You could win up to 5 episodes and then you were gone from the show.
Yeah.
And they said that up front. And, and when they took that away, they opened it up to all these long rated champions.
Yeah, I think it gets to a point where it gets exciting, though, right? Like, James Holzhauser, he won, and, like, it didn't make much noise, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, we got to start tuning into Jeopardy, and, like, when he was really making his run, he also had such an exciting style, the way that played, too. Yeah, like, he was, like, a real Jeopardy game changer. I was thinking a lot about him watching this, and, you know, I think that there's a lot of other really good themes throughout this, too, like, just, like, the ideas, like the types of questions that we hear, right? That, you know, we get a lot of questions about champions, about like boxing champions and different other types of like winners of things, kings, Oscar best pitchers. Like, so we're getting the questions that are highlighted in this movie that Robert Redford and the scriptwriters decide to highlight. Do you have that theme of like being the winner, right? And I think like that being
and what that
like,
does for you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like a nice touch through this, right? Like it kept it from feeling too dry. It never felt dry. It always felt moving. And so I just really like that, like, just some of the little touches. Like, this is like a very like rock solid movie, even if for me it's not like this, you know, it doesn't give me the amazing feeling that it gives you. I think like it's a very solid film.
Yeah, I think part of that is like comes from me being such a lifelong game show fan, especially of Jeopardy. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a huge Jeopardy person. Like, I still watch Jeopardy almost every night. I call my mom for Final Jeopardy. We have calls back and forth where we talk about the question, the category, and then, you know, debate over the answer with each other while the contestants are writing it down. And like, that's the thing is, like, Jeopardy has become this giant cultural touch point, like these game shows were in the 50s. Part of the fun thing, like the really interesting thing about Jeopardy, is that like when they were first coming up with the idea for Jeopardy, they were like, well, because of the quiz show scandals of the 50s, we can't do another quiz show because we can't ask questions that people might already know the answer to. So the creator's wife actually said to him, they came up with this idea, what if you gave them the answer and they had to ask the question?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they reinvented the idea of the quiz show. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and because of that idea, quiz shows got a new lease on life that they hadn't had for 20 years when Jeopardy was brought on. Mm-hmm. So it's like basically these scandals killed a certain type of game show for 20 plus years until they figured out a way to bring them back with Jeopardy.
Yeah, I'm surprised that with 21, that the name 21 just makes me think of blackjack. It doesn't make me think of like a quiz TV show, but also that this was ever exciting TV. Like, there is just no twist on this. It is just people in a booth answering questions.
The betting system doesn't make any sense to me. The point system doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right, no,
to me
neither.
Like, it's a very it feels very random to begin with. So the fact that it was rigged doesn't really surprise me too much because of the way that it's structured being sort of confusing for the casual viewer anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And kind of almost, you know, I talked about Blood Simple earlier. Like, we kind of get dumb criminals in this too, right?
Oh,
like the two producers, David Paymer characters and Hank Azaria,
who are brilliant.
Like, if they wanted to rig this, I mean, and there are probably ways that, like, not that, you know, these reality shows are rigged, but there are ways that it can be influenced a little bit by producers, right? Like, they could have just asked questions that they knew he never actually approached Charlie with this plan to cheat, but they just kind of asked questions that they thought he would know and asked questions they didn't think that Herb would know.
Right, for sure. But the problem is, like, they had, like, already extended so much of, like, the illusion with Herb that, like, they had to be upfront with him because they didn't want him to blow the whistle on all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and I, you know, there are a couple of historical inaccuracies with the way the Van Dorn versus Stemple game played out.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I'm mostly fine with hand waving them because they don't really matter in the long run. It was, you know, it was not a 18-10 game. It was a 16-10 game. The final wager was 5 points, not 3 points from Herb Stemple. And that the next question to Van Dorn didn't end the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they
is that the question that we see him, like the moment of moral choice that we go back to later, that we talk about, you know, that his father talks to him later in the movie about, like, that moment when he chooses to answer the question that he knows is rigged for him.
Yeah, it's the Civil War question. He knows the question's rigged for him, which, by the way, I'm a American history buff and a Civil War nerd, and the only reason I know that guy's name is because of this movie.
Oh,
I never had heard of this before.
I think I will always now remember that Marty won the 55 Best Picture.
Yep, I will never forget it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I did know that, but now I'll definitely know that.
I'll never forget it. But also, like, what a dumb question to begin with, considering it's 2 years after those Oscars would have aired.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really is, like, you see all the reactions from the people watching at home that are like, Marty, it's Marty, what a stupid question. Mm-hmm. So, like, even if Herb, like, wasn't a huge Marty fan, it doesn't make a lot of sense that he wouldn't know.
Brendan, who won the 2022 Oscar Best Picture?
Damn it!
People are yelling at you. I asked that one because that's
Everything
I
Everywhere All at Once.
No, that's 23. 2022
was Coda. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. It's like I just hit Troy Kotsur in the back of the head with a golf ball.
Yeah, what the there hell? You go. No, that's the one I'll be going through, and I'll be like, Nomadland. Like it's so.
Yeah, Coda, freaking Coda.
Coda.
Yep, you're right. Okay, point proven. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I think like you could, you know, and I do like the, you know, speaking of the producer influence, the very first scene that we get, or at least the first game show scene of Herb, is like where they turn off the air conditioning. Like they're trying to make him sweat it out.
Exactly. And he does all of the things that he talks about in his testimony later, where he's like breathing heavily and he's dabbing his forehead with the thing. And
I think that also another like interesting note that I noticed in this is that the mentions of Richard Nixon, that we get Richard Nixon mentioned a few times in this, right? And this is when Nixon is vice president to Eisenhower. This is before the Kennedy debates. And the Kennedy debates, like what they're most well known for is the fact that Richard Nixon was sweating on his upper lip. Right?
Yeah.
He didn't look good on television, and a lot of people blame that for why he lost to Kennedy.
Correct.
And that we get this game show contestant who is also sweating because they're turning off the fan, like how TV is influencing, like how that is being influenced for TV. And I just think for a movie that ends in Washington, D.C., like I really like that tie as well.
You also get this young, charismatic John F. Kennedy coming from a prominent family in Connecticut style guy.
Mm-hmm.
Who's, you know, I mean, I know Kennedy's from Massachusetts. Don't shoot me a DM. What I'm saying is the correlation is there. Have this young New England guy who's part of this prominent family who comes in and overtakes the frumpy looking, dark haired, you know, guy, because he's the younger charismatic one. And Stemple says it later, like, you always have a Jew win, and then the Jew loses to a Gentile, and the ratings change, and then they do it all over again. And they look into that, and like, it happened, you know?
It's almost like, you know, how the balance of power of the White House often shifts. Yes. It's like a Republican president, then we get a Democratic president, and we switch back and forth, right?
Exactly,
then George
H.W. Bush being defeated by the young, quote-unquote young, charismatic Bill Clinton, but then losing, you know, the Democrats lose the following year to another Bush. You know what I mean?
The following administration, not the following
year. Yeah, following, you know what I mean? Yeah.
No, I think as we're talking about this, like I'm thinking about the parallels to politics that I wasn't picking up on watching this, especially again, because like the last shot of the movie, right, is driving away from the Capitol.
Which you can't do anymore. It's all you can for emergencies, but it's all barricaded off and is basically like a walking quad area now where you can't, the driveway part isn't really there anymore. You can't drive right up to it. But I think, like, you probably could in the case of an emergency. Like, that's probably how they drive up for State of the Union and stuff.
Right.
But
the general public can't.
General public cannot drive there.
And there's movies I've seen. I feel like it might have been An American President where they drive right up to the White House, which you can't do anymore,
too.
Yeah,
you can't do that anymore.
So, no, I think, like, you know, the mentions of Richard Nixon. I don't know if we ever get any Kennedy mentions in this.
No.
Like we did in Oppenheimer, that we just get a pregnant
young guy.
Kennedy. Yeah.
John F. Kennedy.
okay,
come on.
So yeah, I like that. I think like, you know, you talked about the young John Turturro. Like I think he's really good in this.
Yeah. He's so good.
I am really held back by Rob Morrow in this.
Really? I think he's great.
No,
I think he's really great. I don't think he's like the best person they could have found for the part. This feels like, speaking of Oppenheimer, that were he not like completely out of Hollywood because of how effed up he had gotten on drugs.
Oh, okay.
This could have been a Robert Downey Jr. part.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
This could have been an RDJ instead of a Rob Morrow. But I think he's really good. I mean, I like his like team of guys he has around him. He feels like, he doesn't feel like your classic like early 90s leading young man type, like a Ben Affleck or a Matt Damon or a Chris O'Donnell even, who wanted this role but was turned down. He actually like feels like the type of guy that would be working for a subcommittee on internal investigations in Congress. You know what I mean? Like, he looks like your average DC bro that works on them.
Yeah. I think his accent didn't really work for me. Like, it's the England accent. I don't know. And just, like, the performance, like, everybody else I thought was really good. He kind of took me out of it. I did want to look and see who was nominated from this. Okay. And I see Paul Scofield was nominated. He was Mark Van Doren.
He's the dad. Yeah.
He's the father. And he,
which is surprising because he's barely in it. But
well, supporting actor. That's a good enough. Supporting performance. Yeah.
I guess so.
He is, like, he's been in a lot of Shakespearean adaptations, and he does have that, like, kind of Shakespearean.
I mean, they have that whole family game where they quote Shakespeare back and forth to each other.
And I think Christopher McDonald is perfect as Jack Barry as the host. Like, he's just bringing so that perfect, Shooter McGavin energy, basically. Smarty, cocky, brash.
Oh yeah, perfect.
And I mean, I think, like, Azaria and David Paymer are both really good, like shady producers. Like, Scorsese, I think, gives a good performance. Like, I think, like, everybody else except Rob Morrow was really good in this.
Yeah, Paymer and Azaria also have, like, that perfect touch of comic relief to their scenes too. Both when they're talking to Herb and when they're talking to Van Doren, they have, like, this, like, what, like. General naivety about what they're doing when they actually know exactly what they're doing. They're like, it's very funny.
Was Paymer in West Wing? I never watched West Wing.
He was also on something else that ran for a really long time. He's a really good that guy actor. He's been on a ton of things.
Yeah, well, it's just interesting because I feel like I've seen him in a lot of stuff, but I was looking at his movie filmography, and I didn't see much that he was in. That, nothing that, like, you know, they're always wondering what is it that he sticks out for him. And so, he's been in a ton of TV shows. Wow.
Yeah, he's been in a ton of stuff.
Scrolling through this. He was on Picard, it looks like, Brendan.
He must have been behind makeup. I don't remember.
One episode, Dr. Benny.
Yeah, no, I don't remember him on Picard at all.
All right. Yeah. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about here? Speaking of the actors in this movie, so Ralph Fiennes, dead ringer, I think, for Bradley Cooper in this movie.
Oh, yeah. This would have been, 30 years greater. This is a Bradley Cooper role. Yeah. Bradley Cooper directs and stars as Charles Van Doren.
I could see that. But I just think he looked a lot like Bradley Cooper.
I think so, too. Yeah.
And the way the performance, and it's a different kind of Ralph Fiennes performance.
I think so.
Obviously he's not Voldemort, but it's a lot different. I just saw him in Grand Budapest Hotel. I just recently watched Schindler's really List. Yeah. Like, he's very different in all of these movies than this one. He's just much more boyish.
He's a really good actor. He's got that, like, he's got that classic New England, like, boyish charm look. And I think that's why I thought a lot about the Jude Law performance in Ripley in this, because also the way he, like, gallivants around, like, kind of reminded me of that same Jude Law energy in that movie. Like, I expected him to turn to Rob Morrow and call him boring. It's very good. I really like Ralph Fiennes in this movie. Was he nominated? He probably wasn't.
No, he was not. Okay. The only actor performance was Paul Scofield.
That's wild. So. Okay.
This movie also nominated for obviously nominated for Best Picture, as we said. Robert Redford nominated for Best Director. Forrest Gump won both of those. Martin Landau from Ed Wood won Best Supporting Actor over Paul Scofield.
He's so good. Yeah, as Bela Lugosi. He's really good in Ed Wood. Yeah.
And then Best Adapted Screenplay was nominated for that. Also makes lost sense. To Forrest Gump, because this that book is based on the book written by Richard Goodwin.
Yeah.
So gotcha. Who's, of course, the Rob Morrow character.
Yeah, did I mention that Barry Levinson also appears in the film as one of the, I can't remember if he's an executive or a congressperson, but there are a lot of director and producer cameos in this film, including Douglas McGrath, Stephen Perlman, William Fichter is in the background of this movie.
He's a stage manager.
Yeah, he's a stage manager. Ethan Hawke.
All the way at the bottom of the list.
Ethan Hawke and Calista Flockhart have a brief cameo in this movie as two of the people in the classroom of Van Doren's classroom. Yeah. Like, it's wild, filled with, like, little cameos.
I didn't notice either of them in this movie.
I didn't either. I was looking, but I didn't see them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like I just recently watched something, and Barry Levinson was also, like, had a cameo in.
Yeah.
It was Blood Simple that he shows up.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was actually the, he was a cinematographer. Oh, no, not Barry Levinson. Barry Sonnenfeld. Just kidding.
You're thinking of Barry Sonnenfeld. Okay, yep. Yeah, gotcha. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Paul Guilfoyle is another, like, that guy that pops up in this movie as one of the as one of the government officials. He's really good in he's the lead detective in the original Recipe CSI with William Peterson.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he's really good in that. He's. So he was on that show forever.
And jumping back to the summer of Sorvino, we do have Mira Sorvino showing up. So she is Richard Goodwin's wife in this movie.
Yep.
Unrecognizable to me.
Yeah, she's barely in the film, too.
Well, and just, she's not
in that really like much. Her, yeah.
And there really aren't very many women in this movie at all, but, you know, that she has dark hair and, so, you know, no Romeo and Michelle look for Mira Sorvino.
Yeah, for sure.
But, yes, the summer of Sorvino, I think that was 2 years ago that we had the summer of Sorvino. And this is Mira Sorvino's third appearance on the podcast after Summer of Sam and Romeo and Michelle.
Who played John Turturro's wife? Because I kept thinking I must know her from something, but I wasn't sure who she was.
Yeah, that's a good question because she is
Joanne Carlo.
Joanne
Carlo is Toby Semple. I don't know who that is at all. Yeah.
No. Yeah, but she's been in some movies, but not.
Yeah. Okay.
And not any huge roles.
She was good. I really liked her in the. I really liked her in the scene where she's trying to make the coffee and everything. Yeah. It's, she's really good.
Yeah, I think I don't know. That's all I really have in my notes. I do like the. Actually, I have a couple other things. One, I do like that we open with the fast version of Mac the Knife.
Yes, and then we close with the...
Mm-hmm. We close with the slower version, yes. So this podcast also will open with the regular version of Mac the Knife, and the last podcast closed with it. So
wonderful.
I think that's good. Another production thing that I noticed is, there's some weird scene breaks, almost like it's, episodes of a TV show.
Yeah, there was one, right about halfway through the film that I thought maybe was, Amazon glitched out for a second or something, where it was just, boom, cut to black, almost like an intermission.
Yeah,
Weird. Yeah, it was a very weird edit.
What I noticed wasn't quite a cut to black. It was more that it was a fade out, almost like what you would get if you were watching TV and you would get get a commercial break.
Yeah.
But I was watching it on Hoopla, so I don't think that. I think it was just the way the movie was produced that it kind of has a scene ends and it fades out and then you fade into the next scene. Just kind of It's not sort of an old timey feel, which I guess maybe if that's what they were going for the period piece, that kind of works. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, for sure.
And then going back to all of the Nixon and Kennedy themes that we talked about, we do get in the when we get over the credits this what everybody did for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. That Goodwin, I believe it was Goodwin, went on to be the Kennedy speechwriter.
Yep, Goodwin went on to work for Kennedy.
So, that is our reference to Kennedy. When I said, did we have a reference to Kennedy? Yes, we did have a reference to Kennedy in that.
Yep, there you go.
Did they ever make any movies about the debate between Nixon and Kennedy?
Not that I can recall, no. I'm sure it happened in the, 6-part Kennedy miniseries that aired in the 90s, but not any movies that are specifically about that. That would be interesting, though.
Yeah. Nothing that I had heard about because I kept wanting to, there's a Nixon movie that I do have on my list that is about TV production, but it is, I kept being like, oh, was that about the debate? But it's not about the debate.
It's a different debate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a very different debate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what to say about this movie except that as you said, you often say some movies just give you the warm fuzzies. Maybe it was the bourbon, but this movie gave me the warm fuzzies last night. I was I was riding with this movie the entire time. I adore this. I think that especially Ralph Fiennes and John Turturro are two actors that I greatly enjoy who are just cranking at 100 the entire film. They just nail it. I love watching actors. I love giving really great performances. So
nice.
Yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
That's all I got to say about that. Should we? What would you pick as best picture from the 1995 Oscars? I can give you the movies in just a second.
It's Gump, Pulp Fiction, this, and then what are the other two?
Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Nope.
Somebody's gonna be mad at you about that. And Shawshank is the other one.
Oh yeah, Shawshank. So I mean, that is a really strong crop of nominees for sure. Like, any of those winning is a good thing. I still think Gorescope deserved to win. Over it, as much as I love Pulp Fiction, like, I still love Forrest Gump. Like, it's fine that it won. I don't know why people are all mad. Like, Quentin Tarantino's life is fine.
Yeah. Okay? I think the legacy of Pulp Fiction is almost stronger because it didn't win.
Right. Right. I think so, too. I agree.
It being, you know, going back to Survivor, being the, like, runner-up on Survivor versus the winner of Survivor. I think I would agree. I mean, like, you know, Pulp Fiction won, that'd be great. But I think Forrest Gump, like, especially for the type of movies that the Academy – that the Academy awards the Oscars to, right? The Academy recognizes. Sure. Like, I do think Forrest Gump makes sense. Shawshank is one I would revisit. It's one that is never, like, I mean, it's fine, but I just feel like it's just fine. And while I like this movie, I think, like, this movie going up against Forrest Gump, I think, like, Gump just does what this movie does a little bit better, right? It does the time period. Right. It's a little bit more epic. I mean, you know, it's based on a book. Like, there are a lot of connections. If we hadn't done Gump already, there are a ton of connections between
this movie. Yeah, I mean, the fact that this movie, is nominated for Best Picture just makes sense because it feels like it would be best nominated for Best Picture today if it were made. Yeah. Like, it's that kind of movie. You know what I mean? And yeah, so it slides right in nicely. Even if it didn't get a lot of other critical nominations, I think it makes sense as a Best Picture now.
Nice. Okay. Well, that's a good place to move on to feedback.
Yep.
So we've got our feedback.
Let's start with first.
Oh yeah. Thank you. No matter how long we do the box office.
I know. You always forget.
I always forget.
Maybe we should move it.
Yeah. The box office.
Yeah. Maybe we should move it.
All right. So this movie, like you said, almost 30 years ago, came out on September 14th, 1994, had its NYC premiere and then a limited weekend release. So debuted at number 16 at 27 theaters, but then expanding the following weekend to 219 theaters. And that moved up to number 4 on the box office. So I'm going to.
And that number 4 slotting put it right between two other movie ladder films.
Yes, yeah, so that is correct.
It's a movie ladder sandwich.
Movie ladder sandwich between Forrest Gump in its. What is it? Its 12th week of release, Quiz Show in its second week of release, and Clear and Present Danger. We did Clear Present Danger, not Patriot Games, correct?
This is correct, yes. Okay, we did Clear Present Danger, not Patriot Games, yes.
Wow, this is a great box office, though. So the number one movie, you know, maybe not a great movie, but a notable movie in Time Cop was number one that week.
What's wrong with Time Cop? Oh, yeah, it's not very good. That's why. Sure, Jean-Claude, Jean-Claude.
Number two movie, a movie I feel like I rented from the video store like 10 times. That is Terminal Velocity.
Hell yeah.
I think that's Charlie Sheen. And
yeah, that's Charlie Sheen in these,
Holly, not Holly Hunter, but the Holly that's in Dumb and Dumber, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Lauren Holly.
Holly, thank you. Lauren Holly,
Smitty, Smatty, Smutty, Samsonite.
I was way off, Samsonite could be a sponsor of 21.
Indeed.
At number 6, we've got Natural Born Killers. At number 7, The Mask. Number 9, we've got True Lies.
Wow, we used to make things in this country.
Yeah. Shawshank debuting this week at number 13. Wow. At number 14, in its 68th week of release. So I would imagine this has been released and re-released. Do you want to try to guess? So it is a movie from the summer. No, it's from the summer of 1993.
Jurassic Park.
Yes, good job.
Yeah, JP.
Another movie in its 41st week of release at number 16, also starring Ralph Fiennes, that is Schindler's List in the box office at the same time. So
what a time to be alive, 1994.
And then also Flintstones at number 15. So Little Rascals in the box. I mean, like, everything is just like
this. Speaking of television, the Flintstones.
Yeah, this whole top 16 really banger. Wow.
What a time to be alive.
There we go. All right. Well, kick things off in our feedback section with Travis. Quiz Show was my pick, right? From last week?
Yes. Yeah, okay. You got the
note.
Yes.
No listener leading off the feedback.
Sir.
Yes. No listener leading off the feedback this week for their pick. Travis says, quite enjoyed this movie. I found the story interesting and the acting all around impressive. Specifically, I enjoyed Totoro's performance. My only minor nitpick is that at points I felt the runtime. Not many movies have a Newfoundland reference. he's excited about that. 4 stars. Sure.
Nice. Yeah, a solid score.
Agree with both. Totoro's performance was my favorite of this movie.
Yeah, I think he's really, really good, especially when he's like you know, like talking to his son about how like the system was rigged and how he was like, and teaching his son like his homework and his lessons. Like,
yeah.
I thought that, I think he's really good, like, in this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, he just brings such energy. You can see how, you know, if this was like a reality show, why he would get cast as a reality show character.
Yeah. And he's such a versatile actor. Like, because I mean, this is like wholly different from his role he's going to have a couple years later in Oh Brother, or his role a couple years earlier in Barton Fink. Like, these are very different performances. And so he's very good. Yeah.
I agree. I felt the runtime a little bit. It did drag a little bit towards the middle.
Okay. Rough. All right. Alex O says, at one point during quiz show, I was wondering, why do they need to show some of these details? Surely this can't be important.
Surely.
Only to learn at the end of the movie that all of this was all real, so all of these details mostly actually happened. I had never heard of this story before, so it immediately brought the movie up a bit in my estimation. John Turturro stood out especially as the slighted Herb Stemple, and Rafe Buds played the feckless, shout out to Dr. Mick Van Doren. Well, also, I do think the plotting and direction felt a little like a watered down version of All the President's Men, but maybe that's just because I knew that Robert Redford was directing it. 4 stars. So there you go.
Yep. No, I think All the President's Men, definitely a very clear movie map for me off of this movie, exposing the scandal, although that a much bigger scandal. Yep. All the Washington, D.C. connections, Nixon, Kennedy.
I want to put television on trial.
Television being, I mean, we talked a lot about the TV being on in the background when we talked about All the President's Men last year. I think that definitely makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Jim says, quiz show was fun to see again. All right, short and sweet by Jim. 4.5 out of 5 from Jim. He disagrees with me, though, because his MVP is Rob Morrow.
Thank you. Somebody else who enjoyed Rob Morrow. I appreciate that.
Congratulations to you and Jim.
All right. The Great Ron writes in and says, for a fairly low-stakes media manipulation, makes for a pretty compelling story and displays the stress on the characters very well. 4 stars. Yeah, I mean, this is like a, you know, they talk about, you know, this is not just a manipulation of the game itself, but of the American public. And, you know, that this movie is the, you know, this scandal is the reason that game shows have regulations, why producers can't control what people say or do directly on a game show like Survivor or Big Brother, or, you know, or even like regular game shows like The Price is Right, or, you know, you can't do certain things on a game show and get away with it. You can't let somebody win a challenge. You can't let somebody tell somebody they had an answer right when they had it wrong. It's why Jeopardy has fact checkers.
Yeah. I love the scene when Morrow's character is going back through like the old film and is watching Jack Barry, where he like on autopilot says, "Oh, you got the question wrong," but then realizes the guy actually got the question right. It's like the smoking gun.
Yeah.
I think that was just a really good scene where he just keeps rewinding it. Again, power of television, using television to watch that.
Exactly.
All right. Megan the Librarian says, I remember thinking this movie was great when I saw it in 1994, and I found it held up well. It's an interesting story, the movie is well made, and the cast is outstanding. 4 stars.
Boom, nailed it.
Yep. I would love to see a version of this, a newer version of this, that's like, now that we have these game show regulations.
Right.
Almost like, do you remember that movie that came out in the 90s that was like pro wrestling's secrets revealed? And it was guy exposing.
It was one of those Bravos. It was a Bravo thing, right? Where it was
I don't think it was Bravo, but it
behind
was
behind the mat, of, like behind the mat or something like that.
No, it wasn't behind the mat. It was like a documentary where a guy's like, this is the ways that like, these are the secrets of pro wrestling. I would love to see the secrets of reality TV / like game shows and like what. Right. Because there is a line that they can push up to. And what are the ways the producers of these shows push up to the line and influence things without actually breaking these regulations?
It's like how they change the rules. Because they're allowed to manipulate, like Survivor, they're allowed to manipulate the rules. They just have to be up front with the contestants about the rules that they're changing.
Yeah, I just want to know. So, I want to know the different ways that they kind of rig without breaking.
For sure. Yeah. All right. Robbie writes in and says, What happens when you take away the only thing that makes a nobody relevant? I liked how this showed the seedy aspects of this fictional quiz show that rigged a game to help get better ratings for their show and how it came back to get them because of who they asked to rig it. And then who eventually looked into the case and how he was able to identify the bigger conspiracy around the show. 4 stars. And I know
this
what
was
he means.
This is a real quiz
no,
show.
No, but right? I know what he means. He means that the quiz show overall was fake because they were giving people the answers. Like,
oh, I
they,
see.
They were giving you the perception that it was real when it was actually like fake.
It was actually pretty. It's much like pro wrestling. I guess we did end up picking a good movie for because we kept wanting to push for Man in the Moon last week because it was WrestleMania weekend. Yep. Also, we did not think about with Man in the Moon and Apollo 13 last week that we had Eclipse week. So it would have been really good to do a moon-related movie. Yep. Didn't do that, but we did do quiz show. So.
Yep. Lots of connections back to last week as well, based on what happens in this movie.
For sure. One more bit of feedback before we get there, though. Stefan says, I had never even heard of this movie, so it was a pleasant surprise. Fiennes and Murrow really stood out. Also, Robert Redford is a director, Yes, he has
he is. He's directed a lot of films.
And a good one. Martin Scorsese is an actor, And a good one. That one, you don't see Scorsese acting as much in movies. Stefan says, 3.75, so you choose 3.5 or 4.
So this is why I wanted Stefan's feedback to be last, is because I demand we rig the game and we make it a 4 so that he's in the hand-holding club with everyone else.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, like I was going to say, like, I'm impressed how much, like, outside of Jim's 4.5, everybody else is 4. Like, this,
yeah,
I think
exactly.
That
actually happened a couple weeks ago, too, where everybody down the line was a 4. It's pretty wild. Yeah, that's only ever happened, like, one other time. Let me find it. It was and it got changed a little bit because of one higher rating as well. It was The Big Short.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Big Short is a 4.06, and this is a 4.07 from the listeners. Oh, yeah. Okay. So it's like,
I do think like this is, I guess I'll just get into my rating, and this is like, this movie is the definition of a 4-star movie. It is, I would watch it again. I think it's rock solid. I think it's like drags a little bit. Rob Morrow isn't that great. But I think like it's like, it's an interesting,
docudrama is a good,
fictionalized real life story. I think that the comparison to All the President's Men is very apt, and I think All the President's Men is obviously better and higher stakes, but like, especially if you're into like production and TV production, like it's always good to see behind the camera and see like how the sausage is made. So I like that.
Yep. All right. Well, I mean, I think I laid out pretty clearly why I vibe with this movie. This is a 5-star movie for me. I mean, it's one of my top 3 for 1994 for a reason. Nice. I absolutely adore this movie. Loved everything. Yeah, it's a 5. So that's going to give us a 4.36 overall, which will be a 4.5 for Letterboxd.
Cool.
So there you go.
Here of the movie. John Turturro's mine. I think he's just great.
Well, I'm going to go to the other side and give it to Ralph Fiennes then.
Yeah, I feel like we didn't talk a ton about Ralph Fiennes, but he's also very solid in this.
They're both really great actors. I mean, what more is there to say? Like, they're perfect. Like, they're perfect for this movie.
I mean, in general, just like a really good cast, like top to bottom.
Absolutely,
people showing up in this. Like, I had seen the cast list, but I didn't look at it too closely. So like, I was very surprised when I'm like, oh, that's Scorsese showing up. Which does like immediately trigger like warning bells of like, okay, we're gonna see something about like crime and scandal. Again, it would.
Yeah, I mean, how much did you know? I don't think we talked about this on the pod. How much did you know about this going in? Like exactly what this movie was?
Nothing really.
Any of the implications or anything? Like,
I knew it was about a game show scandal. I mean, in my mind, even though this was before Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, like I just kept thinking it was like a guy on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire getting like the answers fed to him. So yeah, no, I didn't know about the scandal. I mean, this is obviously like back in the 50s, so way before I was born. And like, I like game shows, but I'm not like a game show. I mean, I'll watch them if they're on, but I don't seek game shows out. But I do sometimes get swept up in the game show craze, right? I got swept up in James Holzhauser back when Millionaire first came out. I was watching that every night. The Weakest Link I got into.
Weakest Link was fun.
Obviously, we both like Survivor and, you know, which kind of falls into the same category. What would you say is your like number one all time game show?
Oh, probably Jeopardy. I mean, because it's what I've been watching my entire life. And like my brother, Craig, even auditioned for Jeopardy and didn't get on. Like, it's Jeopardy's always just been a part of my life. Like,
yeah,
and it probably always will be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to go the one of the Nickelodeon game shows. I used to really love Nick Arcade or Double Dare. Like, I know
Double Dare is so good.
Yeah. Those shows obviously are like, they didn't have the staying power that Jeopardy did, but they just, I always wanted to be on those when I was a kid. There is a really good Nickelodeon documentary on Hulu that was made a couple years ago. That's like kind of the dark side of Nickelodeon. And I don't remember the name of it, but if you go on Hulu and look up Nickelodeon documentary, you should see it. And that was like,
there's a new one as well on HBO Max. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I really loved, there are a couple of Comedy Central ones that came out in the early 2000s that I thought were really fun. One was called Beat the Geeks, where it was contestants basically playing Jeopardy, but geeky categories against three people dressed in Jedi robes, who were like the geek experts on different genres of like sci-fi, fantasy, nerddom. That was a really fun one on Comedy Central. And then Win Bedside's Money.
Yeah, that's classic.
I thought was really, really fun. Gave us Jimmy Kimmel as well.
I do feel like, I don't remember when that show debuted, but I almost feel like we could have gotten Ben Stein in a role in this movie.
He should have been one of the executives or something. Yeah. Or the congressman, yeah. He should have been a congressman.
Yeah, he could have been a good congressman. And I did just look it up. The Orange Years is the name of that Nickelodeon documentary that I watched on Hulu. It looks like it is no longer on Hulu, but it is on Hoopla, also on Plex, Roku Channel, and Tubi.
There you go.
And one other game show I'll shout out is the ESPN game show Stump the Schwab.
That's right. I do remember Stump the Schwab.
All right. So we gave our hero the movies. We have our title connection already. The show must go on. What other connections do you have to the Truman Show from last week?
I mean, we have, you know, the manipulation of the producer and director roles on our main character. We have the main character trying to break out of his reality and, you know, the whole like fighting against the system thing. We have people rushing to the television constantly.
Yep.
In this movie and in Truman Show,
we're seeing the audience, like the nuns at the beginning that are watching this, and all the different. Exactly. People. We don't have a guy in a bathtub watching this show, but we do have crowding around the TV. Also have very prominent product placement in both movies.
Oh, we have the thing with the radio at the beginning we were talking about with the Rob Morrow scene, and then we have the scene with Truman flipping through the radio when he hears about a satellite.
That's good.
The radio in this film talks about Sputnik, so there you go.
All right. Connections to other movies from this year. Immediately I was thinking of Pleasantville in terms of the 50s and Revolutionary Road as well. Back to the 50s.
Well, if you what I was going to say is, if you look at the similar films on Letterboxd, number 7 is The Truman Show, number 9 is Pleasantville, and number something in the somewhere in the teens is Revolutionary Road.
Oh, cool.
So there you go. 50s. We've been heading in the right direction to get to this movie based on the things we've been watching this year. So
I mean, we've circled back to Scorsese. We had Scorsese in The Departed. I mean, this is, and I do think we have to decide, like, okay, so Scorsese, I think, what did we have him in, like the 10 Timers Club? For directing him as, he's in the 9 Timers Club, 10 Timers Club for Leo. But now is Martin Scorsese a member of the 10 Timers Club because he's 9 times directing and 1 time starring?
Yes, because he's still appeared on the podcast. So, yes.
All right. It's going to be hard to remember that Scorsese is now welcome to the 10 Timers Club.
Good job,
although I feel like he probably has appeared as he appears in Wolf of Wall Street. He's credited in Wolf of Wall Street.
But that only counts as one because he also directed it.
True. Credited in Mean Streets. Well, uncredited.
Still only counts as one.
In Mean Streets. Hugo, After Hours. So he does show up in the movies
that he has
directed. Yeah.
Very true.
I did think that was interesting that we finally got Scorsese into the 10 Timers Club, for directing. So we circle back to Scorsese. We circle back to the 1950s. We also circled back to Boston Accents.
Yep, we did do that.
Yep. And then Michael Bellhouse, who is the filmographer, the cinematographer of this movie, I believe. Yep. I did notice that he Yeah, he's a cinematographer, and he's now in the Six Timers Club, mostly because of Scorsese movies, because he did Goodfellas, Departed, After Hours. He did Quiz Show, and then Working Girl, and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels as well.
Yeah, we've done a lot of uncovering corruption films this year, between American Gangster and Chinatown and The Nice Guys and The Big Short and Wolf of Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of corruption happening in our ladder this year, and so maybe we're ready to take it in front of Congress, and now that it's been in front of Congress, put all this scandal behind us and move on somewhere else.
Yeah.
What a scandalous year.
Also, just connect to product placement, connecting to Barbie as well. Just
Watch the product placement in Pleasantville and in Truman Show, because we had the whole thing with the Coco in Truman Show.
I said that earlier, but you just went right into you started talking about something else.
Sorry, I did not. Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm glad that you called it out, because I thought it was a good connection to Truman Show, and I'm glad we've gone back to it. All right, movie map. I already said mine. Mine was All the President's Men. What is yours? Yep.
And I said Shattered Glass.
Shattered Glass. So Clear and Present Danger, All the President's Men, Shattered Glass, 1, 2, 3, right in a row last year.
And Hank Azaria was in Shattered Glass. There you go.
Oh, that's a good point. And
Robert Redford was in President's Men. So there you
those movies were almost exactly a year ago. Just off by a couple weeks.
Wow. Look at all us. Right.
One last thing.
So originally, Robert Redford approached his good friend Paul Newman to play Charles Van Doren's dad. Do you think that would have worked? He turned it down.
Mm-hmm.
He was busy doing his own thing at the time. Do you think that would have worked? Do you think that?
Yes, I think it would have been good. And
does he still get nominated for an Oscar?
Probably, because Paul Newman. Also, would be a nice connection to a movie that I have on my list. So that would be good.
There you go. All right.
And one thing I didn't say was this movie's come up a ton on this podcast. Yes. This is not my one last thing. So it came up off I'm Thinking of Ending Things. I do not know why. I suggested it off I'm Thinking of Ending Things. No idea why.
Interesting.
I don't know if you have any idea why.
I'm not positive. I can't think of something.
I don't know. I can't think. Maybe was there a game show scene in that or something? Were they watching a game show?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I suggested it off Shattered Glass, so good for your that movie map. I suggested it off American Hustle last year. A movie we didn't talk about in the movie map, but makes sense for the TV perspective. I suggested it off of Running Man.
Yep. Also makes sense.
So it's been me suggesting it a lot. I suggested it off. Oh, no, you suggested it off Titanic. But that was off of my list. And then, of course, I suggested it last week off Truman Show.
There you go. All right. Boom.
My one last thing, we talked a lot about reality TV, and I do think that it's interesting that that the Charles Van Doren story, he is applying to one show and gets cast on another.
Exactly.
Which ends up having all of these ramifications outside of the game, much like our friend Rob Sesternino was applying for Big Brother and got cast on Survivor and ended up like having this whole Survivor universe.
So it's sliding doors, buddy. Sliding doors. He was trying to be on Tic-Tac-Toe.
Yes, I was trying to remember the name of it.
Which sounds a little Big Brother, so there you go.
True, yes, that does sound like at least a Big Brother game, if nothing else. So, all right, cool. Anything else on Quiz Show? Probably not, right?
I think we're good. I think we covered it.
Cool.
I think we should rewatch it in a couple of years, and maybe you'll change your score.
You know what? I watched the first 20 minutes again, and I'm like a little tempted to watch the rest of it, but I probably won't. But I think it's like 4 stars, so it's a very rewatchable film. And like everybody agrees.
Everybody knows.
This is very consensus from our listeners. All right.
Yep.
We're gonna pick our movie for next week for episode number 224. Once we do pick that movie, send your feedback at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, movieladder@gmail.com. Of course, check out Letterboxd, where you can see all the movies suggested over the 4+ years, almost 5 years of this podcast, and our watch list. And you can see everything that we've covered, because often we've done a movie that you might want to suggest.
Indeed.
Travis kicks us off, and he has a movie out that was on my list too, probably on a lot of lists. That is Slumdog Millionaire. 21 was put back on the air in the early 2000s to compete with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yep, I didn't know that.
All right. Alex O says, one of my all-time favorite Best Picture winners, which I would never take a dive on, that is Marty.
And never seen Marty.
Pitches that he said he would be our Marty next week if we want him. Marty, if we want him to come on.
Marty! Obviously lots of Marty in this film. Because of Marty Scorsese and Marty the movie.
Oh, I didn't think about Marty Scorsese. Yeah, that's good. Yep. Another tale of corruptive powers of media network. Yes.
Yep.
I was also thinking with network, like we've done now You know, if we were going to continue on TV month, right, that we have done, Pleasantville. So Pleasantville is like the TV sitcom.
Yep.
Truman Show is like the reality TV, you know, drama. This week we have the game show. Like the next one could be like news, sports, like news, another very like mainstay television genre. So Network would definitely be one and was on my list.
Yep.
Another movie with a similar John Turturro role and also a leading actor that reminds me a lot of Rob Morrow's performance in this one. That is Miller's Crossing. I'd be curious who the actor.
I'm confused. Does he mean Miller's Crossing or does he mean Barton Fink? Because Miller's Crossing is a very different.
I don't know. He says Miller's Crossing. You got to go with what he has.
Okay. Yeah. I'll have to talk to Alex about that one. Because what he's describing, I think, reminds me of Barton Fink, which is on my list.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah. Miller's Crossing, one that I've wanted to revisit.
Miller's Crossing is a gangster film.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he just says that there's a role that reminds him of Rob Morrow. Gotcha. So maybe there's a cop or something. All right. Jim has Good Night and Good Luck, another more hopeful film that shows classic conflict between TV and Congress. But here the TV men are taking down the congressman instead of the other way around.
Yep. And it's also an actor director.
Oh, it is.
George Clooney. Yeah. Yep. George Clooney.
It's about
communism. Yeah.
Yeah. Red Scare. Because there is. There was a lot of like Red Scare kind of Russians, yeah. Cold War references in this.
Yep. Absolutely.
And then his other one, Maze. Rob Morrow directs and stars in this movie about an artist with Tourette's syndrome who falls in love with a character played by Laura Linney. Laura Linney back.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Ron has 21. Manipulation in a game where 21 is significant. Oh, very bad. I like that connection. Very nice.
It was very scandalous when it happened too.
That was card counting instead of
card counting. Yeah, card counting scandal. Yeah.
His next one, Good Night and Good Luck, congressional investigations, directed by a notable actor, George Clooney.
Boom.
And The Conspirator from 2010. Yep. Robert Redford directs a movie about a much higher stakes conspiracy.
That is the Lincoln assassination movie, I believe.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay. Yeah, it'd be a good tie with Manhunt.
Yep.
So. TV show on Apple Plus. Are you keeping up with Manhunt?
No, I'm not. I dropped off after two episodes.
It's not that great.
I really like the Tobias Menzies performance, but okay.
I think Manhunt is an example much of like, a TV show that could have been would have just been better as a movie.
Much like Masters of the Air, which I also dropped off of. Like that tends to be my current like mode for Apple TV is I'll start it and then after a couple episodes I'll just forget to go back to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think Manhunt 2, the problem with it is they're trying so hard to tie it to current day stuff where they make like references to April 14th as the date, the way that we talk about January 6th. And like, there's a lot of like very heavy handed references. They're too cute by half trying to we get the similarities.
Yeah.
All right. Stefan has The English Patient. Conflict defines.
Also another Best Picture film that I have not seen.
Yes.
So there you go.
The English Patient win?
I think it was just nominated, right?
I don't remember.
Did it win? I can't recall. I've never seen it. Saeed is in that movie.
He is.
Yeah.
Yes. The English Patient won 1997.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's okay. Yeah.
Never seen 9 Academy Awards, including Best Picture.
That's a lot of Academy Awards.
It is. All right. Next one. Captain America Winter Soldier. Robert Redford is as a director. He means like literally he's a director of the government
conspiracy there too. You go. Uncovering a conspiracy.
Yes. And then The Rainmaker, a courtroom drama.
There you go.
So, yep, there we go. All right. Megan Librarian, The Man for All Seasons. Paul Scofield won an Oscar for playing Sir Thomas More in this film, more famously stuck to a strict code of ethics, and Scofield's casting in Quiz Show as a morally upstanding father feels very intentional to me. Oh, that's a nice touch like that. The Hunger Games, suggesting this again because, like Quiz Show, it is about how producers mess with a game show to get higher ratings.
Yep, exactly.
And then Cinderella Man, mostly because of James J. Braddock and Max Baer get mentioned in Quiz Show, but also this film is about a person who captures popular imagination by winning.
Yep, there you go.
We do get tons of references to boxers, too.
The James Braddock, Max Baer, all that is mentioned in here.
Oh, those are the questions. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Robbie has Schindler's List, Ralph Fiennes. I mean, there are lots of references to Jewish characters in Quiz Show.
Absolutely. Well. Yeah. Yep.
And then Do the Right Thing for John Turturro.
Yep.
I always forget.
Does he do the right thing? into there, I think. I don't recall. Yeah.
That's the whole debate of the movie. Yeah.
It's the whole debate of the movie.
And then my brother Aaron has Ordinary People, a great Robert Redford movie that also did win Best Picture.
Yep. So. Robert Redford directed.
Yeah. And when he sent me that, I said, yes, it's a Robert Redford movie. And then I look back at my Letterboxd review and I was like, oh, I guess I liked Ordinary People more than I remember liking Ordinary People.
Because it's kind of like a boring movie in your memory. You know what I mean?
Right. But like, I think it was like I did have a lot of good stuff about grief. So I think it like.
There you go. Yeah, it does. It's a really good treatise on family and relationships and mental health and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
It would be good for we're getting close to Cirque week in Library Ladder. And so I do feel like Ordinary People would be kind of like Cirque-esque.
Cirque du Soleil.
There we go.
All right.
Go ahead.
I get to go first this week, which is great. I've got a couple of game show related films. First is a movie that came out last year, streaming on Hulu, Quiz Lady. Oh, it's about a lady who's obsessed with a specific game show. That game show is hosted by Will Ferrell.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I liked Quiz Show. It was fun. Or Quiz Lady. Quiz Lady is fun. Let's see. Nobody said Marty. Oh, wait. Did somebody say Marty?
No, Alexo said Marty.
Oh, Alexo said Marty. Okay, I'm going to take it off my list. All right. Well, nobody said Barton Fink. I will take Barton Fink as my John Turturro pick. Robert Redford.
Business as well as a connection there.
Yep. Robert Redford is a candidate who is trying to avoid a scandal. Let's go with the candidate.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. The candidate.
Lots of DC stuff. We've got an election year coming up.
Exactly. Rick Bynes in a conspiracy movie, Constant Gardner.
I remember seeing that movie and I remember nothing about it.
How about someone trying to recover their life after a scandal about them is exposed? This one is starring Melissa McCarthy, Can You Ever Forgive Me? And then finally, a game show host goes off the rails, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, starring Sam Rockwell.
Wasn't that directed by Clooney as well?
That might have been a Clooney joint. Yeah, that might be actor director as well. I think you might be right on that one.
Yes.
And then how about a conspiracy behind a reality TV show called Live! Exclamation point.
Live! Exclamation point. Just found that one
earlier today. Yep.
Yeah. What reality show?
Those are my six. I don't know. It's a made up reality show. So
I've never seen it. Confession of a Dangerous Mind is directed by George Clooney. And he's in it as well.
That's right. He is. Okay. Yeah. So those are my six. There we go.
Cool. All right. You only took one off my list. That is Barton Fink. And I also had Slumdog taken off my list, Marty and Network. So the first one, this is the movie that there's really not a great connection to this, but it's just the movie I always confused Quiz Show with as a kid at the video store. And that is IQ. Connection of Q. I think they came out around the same time. I have no idea, but I always confused IQ and Quiz Show.
Weird.
Also, Quiz Show is about guys with good IQs because they're good at this.
That's very true. They are very smart.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Which one? Exposing Hollywood Corruption. I have She Said.
Yeah, that's good.
Yep. So I have that. Nice. References to the Russians beating us in the space race, the way TV can be manipulated, Capricorn 1.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's see. I did mention it earlier. This is not about the Kennedy-Nixon debate, but it is about a TV production that is Frost-Nixon.
Yeah, it almost made my list, too. Good job.
Yeah. So that is four movies. I have one that I'm going to end with, so I have to pick what my fifth movie is going to be. What was the Gregory Peck Behind Enemy Lines movie? Do you know the one that they referenced earlier in the movie?
Oh, shit. Is that...
That's when the producers say, like, you know, it's not really Gregory Peck Behind Enemy Lines. It is...
It's a 40s movie. Is that Sergeant York, maybe? I'm not sure. I'm not positive. Yeah, sorry. No. Olin's going to know and he's going to write it to us. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's a book that came up when I searched it. Okay. Well, that is not the one that I will do. Let's see. What do I want to do? I will do. Sorry. I just can't decide on second to last one. You know what? You had a Will Ferrell movie about a host. How about a Will Ferrell movie about a game show or a news show? Yeah, let's just throw Anchorman on there. Circle back to Will Ferrell once again.
Hey, if you put it on the screen, he's going to read it.
Exactly. And we do see the cue cards, not teleprompter. Cue cards
and everything, yep.
And my last one. So we've got Martin Scorsese. We've got John Turturro. We have a movie about scamming. You did mention that Paul Newman was almost cast in this movie. So how about The Color of Money? If we do The Color of Money, I will have to watch The Hustler first because I've never seen that.
Yes, you will.
But please. Yeah. I thought like that's scamming a game, not a game show.
No one has looked hotter in a movie than Paul Newman in The Hustler leaning over a pool table the first time you see
debate,
him.
We can debate that, I guess.
So good.
And yes, then we would get Scorsese properly into the Ten Timers Club if we did.
There you go. Boom.
Yeah. All right.
I like it. This is a good list. All right. Let me take it from the top. We have Slumdog Millionaire, Marty, Network, Miller's Crossing, Good Night and Good Luck, Maze, 21, Good Night and Good Luck Again, The Conspirator, The English Patient, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, The Rainmaker, A Man for All Seasons, The Hunger Games, The Cinderella Man, Schindler's List, Do the Right Thing, Ordinary People, Quiz Lady, Barton Fink, The Candidate, Constant Gardener, Can You Ever Forgive Me, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, Live, IQ, She Said, Capricorn One, Frost and Nixon, Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and The Color of Money. Zach, you get to go first.
Oh, man. All right. I should have been ready for this.
Man, what you gonna do about it, Poindexter?
I think it's Slumdog Millionaire. Best Picture winner.
Yeah, makes sense.
Game show. I was thinking a lot about Slumdog Millionaire.
Also, people think that he's cheating.
Yeah. It turns into like an investigation of a scandal. Exactly. It's one that I have not watched since I saw it in theaters, so it'd be interesting to revisit it.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen it. Probably around the same time as it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I like all the references in this film to McCarthyism. I think it makes a lot of sense to pick Good Night and Good Luck from the listener list. It's definitely one that I thought about, not only myself. So, yeah, Good Night and Good Luck.
One that has been on my watch list for a very long time. So, all right, off of your list, I got to go with The Candidate. It's an election year. I think the ties are really good.
It's Redford. It's conspiracy.
Redford didn't make The Candidate, right? He just stars in The
Candidate. No, he stars in it. Okay. Yeah.
I've never seen it, and we talked a lot about, about Kennedy in this. We talked a lot about Nixon, and this was made in 72, so I'm sure it is a reaction to Nixon in some ways, because he is a U.S. senator from California. I feel like that is I see that in the description, so it's got to be a Nixon tie.
And for a lot of those same reasons that we talked about throughout this film, I feel like I have to nominate Frost Nixon. When you said that you had a movie that you were going to nominate later, I had to strike Frost Nixon off of my own list and make it also ran.
Mm-hmm.
Frost Nixon makes a lot of sense to me from your list.
I'm surprised you didn't go with The Color of Money. But I understand.
The connections aren't deep enough for me for The Color of Money, despite the cast.
Even though it's about a scandal? It's like about cheaters?
It's not. Yeah, it's not.
Oh, it's not about cheaters?
There's no cheating, no.
Oh, I thought that was what it was about. Oh,
it's just about pool hustlers. They're good pool players. They don't cheat at pool. They're just really good pool players. They pretend that they're not, but, you know. It's,
mm-hmm. Okay. Any other honorable mentions that you want to call out?
Broadcast News is another one along with Network that would have made a lot of sense. I know Network got nominated, but Broadcast News in the same vein has a scandal at the center of it with Albert Brooks, William Hurt. That was the main one that I didn't pick was Broadcast News. Not really anything else I wanted to shout out.
Cool. All right, I had On the Waterfront. Obvious reasons. Nixon on there, which maybe if we do Frost Nixon, we do Nixon in 2 weeks. Lions for Lambs, which is a Robert Redford movie about an election and Washington D.C. scandal.
Which we could end up doing.
I think it's about a TV interview. Social Network, because the scene with the boat reminded me of that. We got references to Harvard and Ivy League schools. And then The Letterbox Point, another movie about TV production, that is The Insider. And there was a line, corporations, they never forget. Corporations always win, which we get insiders all about that.
For sure. Capitalism, baby.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Cool.
Our final four.
Final four. Slumdog Millionaire, Good Night and Good Luck, The Candidate, and Frost Nixon. Only one of these I've never seen, which is The Candidate. Slumdog Millionaire, hopefully streaming somewhere. Probably Netflix.
Bad news, Brendan. We did a very bad job picking this week. Every single one of these is rentable. None are streamable anywhere.
What?
Yeah.
Come on, people. Good Night and Good Luck should be on Max. What are we doing here?
Streamable. Everything, but they're all you can get on any of the rental places. All
right, fine.
So,
all right.
No streaming game for you this week. Yep. Yeah.
This is rigged, I tell you. Rigged.
It is, yes. It is rigged.
The game is rigged.
All right, so the reason why I kind of like Slumdog Millionaire is because we do get Dev Patel in the lead role. We just had Dev Patel's Monkey Man come out this week that you and I both saw. Much younger Dev Patel. But I could be convinced, Good Night and Good Luck. Have you have seen that or you haven't seen that?
I have seen it, and I really like Good Night and Good Luck. Honestly, I'm between Slumdog Millionaire and The Candidate. I think each one of those takes us in a different direction. So it's more a matter of like which you're feeling.
Candidate is a blind spot for you as well.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. It's a blind spot for me. I think we should do The Candidate.
Okay, let's do The Candidate then. Yeah. Finally crossed that Robert Redford off our list. That Robert Redford.
Oh, yeah. Senator Robert Redford. Robert Redford in D.C. Yep. Whatever we want to call it.
That's quite for me. Yay.
Oh, there you go. Yep.
I rigged this.
The poster for The Candidate. He is blowing a bubble in front of an American flag.
Let's so maybe he's
just like a maybe he's just a goofy guy. All right. So fortunately, Candidate is rentable. You might be able to get it at your local library as well. That's a great place to look. But it is it's a good reason to watch it. We are in an election year. Movie about an election.
He's a blonde, good-looking, all-American guy like Charles Van Doren.
Yeah. Robert Redford in this. I do see Natalie Wood happens to show up in this movie.
Nice. Well, let's not look too far down and spoil anything.
I know. Yeah, that's a good point. All right. Well, we are going to do The Candidate next week.
Great.
And then we'll see. It's unfortunate. I mean, unless there's a heavy TV component, I guess TV month comes to an end.
It's in the 80s, so I bet that he's a candidate 70s. On television.
70s.
Yeah. I thought it was 1982 or something like that.
You're close. 1972.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that early. I thought it was the 80s for some reason. Okay.
Is the same director who did Bad News Bears, though. So Bad News, it is Michael Ritchie.
I probably nominated this when we did Bad News Bears. You'd have to look that up.
We will find out next week.
But all right, cool. Well, there we go. I'm excited.
Cool. Yeah, blind spot for both of us. So that'll be fun. Great. When was the last time we had a blind spot for both of us on this podcast?
It's been a while.
I don't think at all this year, right?
No.
I think everything has been a rewatch for at least one of us this year.
So the first
double blind on the year.
Yeah, double blind. Yeah. There you go. I like it.
Cool. All right. Brendan, what do you look forward to watching this week?
Friday night, I'm going with our buddy Mac and a few other people to Alamo Drafthouse to go see a special screening of Mandy. The Nicolas Cage film. I have no idea what this film is about, but I'm really excited. I'm really excited to walk out if I absolutely hate it. We'll find out. But either way, it's going to be a good time. And then, other than that, I want to try to check out Sugar, the new Colin Farrell show streaming on Apple TV Plus. So hoping to do that. Yeah.
Nice.
That can be another Apple show where I watch the first couple episodes and never go back to it.
good to know. Yes, I am looking forward to seeing Civil War this weekend. I might go Thursday, comes out. Yeah. And then I got a bunch of other challenge movies on my list, but nothing specifically that I want to call out, but catching up on challenges.
Well, I'm going to be back on the Top Chef pod this week as well. I had a lot of fun with LaTanya and Gia Worthy last week. Kurt and Haley remain in absentia. So we had a really cheesy time on last week's podcast because it was Cheese Week. So we can't wait to find out what this week is going to be. I'm really excited because as you guys have heard in the past, especially this year, I really adore podcasting with LaTanya. She's a really, really great co-host. So getting to get together with her and podcast about Top Chef, which is just ridiculous, is a lot of fun.
Nice. So
there you go. You can find that over on Rob Hunt's podcast.
So. Nice. That's cool. Maybe you will just end up having like a Herbie Stample esque run on that, where you just keep showing up every week on the Top Chef podcast.
Exactly. And then I'm just going to show up, and Haley's going to come back on this podcast in order to kick me off of that one.
Yeah. So you're cashing in your money in the bank.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. And we will be back next week for a blind spot for both of us, maybe a blind spot for some of the listeners, although I
probably just,
at least one listener has logged this movie already.
Kyle Curry.
We'll find out. All right, so we're gonna watch Candidate next week. We'll find out what the hell this candidate is up to and why he is blowing a bubble on his poster.
Candidate.
Yeah, the candy day. There you go.
Yeah.
all right. We'll see you next week, Robert Redford, and see everybody next week for the candidate.
Good night, everybody.
If we're ever going to tackle the problems of the 1970s, we need all the strength a young man can give. Bill McKay has it. The conviction to push for real solutions to the problems of unemployment, poverty, and crime. The determination to put some action back into the United States Senate. The energy to fight the special interests on behalf of all the people of California. For a better way, Bill McKay.
And good luck.
Yes, and good luck. And yes. How.
all right, let's see. What do we got for some Letterboxd reviews for Quiz Show? Colin the Dude says, the only Best Picture nominee to use Best Pictures as a plot point.
That's very funny. That's good.
I wonder if that's true. I feel like that's not. There's so many movies about Hollywood. Like, yeah. It's probably. He did make this review in 2017.
Like actual Best Picture winners, though. Yeah.
Well, this didn't win Best Picture. Oh, yeah. I guess that's true. Well,
Marty did.
Right, but not Quiz Show. Nora has better eyes than us. Nora says, I got such a buzz from that 2-second Ethan Hawke cameo where he plays a Columbia student confused by Don Quixote.
That's yes. It. Yeah.
Did you didn't notice Ethan
Hawke? I did not. I was,
Olivia is right with you. She says, loses a star because Ralph Fiennes and Rob Morrow don't kiss.
Exactly. Yep.
So, yeah. It is not just kiss.
They get so close, but they don't kiss.
Yeah. All right.
He runs to him in the park, Zach. He runs to him in the park in the dark.
True. Yeah.
Like it's a freaking rom-com.
It is. good Lord, was Ralph Fiennes able, Ralph Fiennes able to cross the street in 94 to 95 without women passing out of the mere sight of him. Also featuring the thrilling cameo by Marty. I fucking hate CBM Scorsese. What is CBM? Comic book movies, probably.
Yeah, comic
movies. This is a 2021 review, very much a 2021 review from this guy.
All right.
All right. Well, candidate next week.
All right. I will talk to you later.